All right, good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for joining me on this beautiful Saturday, July 22nd, 2017. Looking forward to a great show with golf writer John Huggin. A lot to talk about. Moving day, I guess, if you will, at the Open Championship. A lot of storylines. So a lot to get to. So let's take a short break so we can get more time with John. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org.
Play like a pro with a custom set of PXG clubs in your bag. Designed to deliver unrivaled performance and fitted to optimize your game, PXG clubs will help you unlock your true potential. We guarantee you've never played like this before. Get fitted for PXG clubs at Pete's Golf Shop today.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Pleased to be joined on the line from the Open Championship at Royal Birkdale, John Huggin. How you doing, John?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me on.
Of course, always a pleasure. And thank you for being a friend of the program and coming on as much as possible. I really appreciate your insights. Wanted to start with the R&A. Did you seem like they gave a little wiggle room, at least acknowledging the distance movement? Some people tried to pull on that thread a little bit. I'm not sure I was buying it. Your thoughts on the press conference from the R&A?
What specifically are you talking about?
Well, I thought there was some acknowledgement that there's been some movement in the distance increasing, and as if it was something that was on their radar, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I'll hear whispers behind the scenes that something might finally be happening on that front. They were at great pains, of course, to point out that the Royal Birkdale here this week is slightly shorter than it was in 2008, the last time the Open was played here. But it's always the same old story, though. If you look at the way that the course is presented, I mean, the first hole in particular, there's basically no fairway left. I mean,
right.
There's certainly no fairway that you can hit. So the wee tricks that they play in order to keep the scores up, and they've realized, I think, that distance really doesn't make any difference to these top professionals anymore. I mean, the Erin Hills last month was proof of that, where the golf course was almost 8,000 yards, and the guys were hitting it over the back in two at holes over 600 yards. So distance is not an effective deterrent for scoring among the top professionals, so you've got to be a wee bit more clever about it. Well, clever in inverted commas, because as I say, I bang on about this. But
yeah, no, it's okay.
The perversion of the top courses, for when the pros come to play, is really shameful. I mean, we don't get to play or see these guys, the top guys, playing these great golf courses in the way that they were originally designed to be played, because they have to pull all these stunts just to keep the scores up. The first tip-off is always, of course, is that an awful lot of the fairway bunkers are actually in the rough, which is the first sign that the fairways have been narrowed to a point where, they really shouldn't be.
Did you, why now, do you think? Is it because of the, people like yourself who have consistently over time been beating this drum, and rightfully so? But why now? Is it because when they look at a place like Birkdale, which everybody, I mean, to a man, seems to, and woman, who, when they played there, loved the golf course. It's a wonderful layout, and looks like something that you'd want to play every day, not just once. But it just seems to me, why now? Why the whispers now? Is it because they've seen what's going on at Birkdale, or is it just, or a combination of both?
Well, I think maybe if you're looking for a tipping point, I mean, I'm only guessing, but Erin Hills might just have been the thing, because I'm not sure if I was on your show or somewhere else where I pointed out that the Erin Hills last month, at the halfway mark, 116 players were averaging over 300 yards off the tee. Now, that was, you know, it was on a very long course with fairways that were wide, so the players were allowed to hit driver if they wanted to hit driver off just about every tee they could. That is not normal. And the numbers that we see, you know, week to week on the PGA Tour and the European Tour for driving distance is a kind of misnomer now. It's nearly, there's an awful lot of three woods in that mix and maybe some long irons even.
Right.
So, but as soon as they saw statistics that accurately portrayed driving distance, because everybody was hitting driver all of a sudden, the numbers were out of control. So maybe that was the tipping point. I'd like to think it was. I certainly don't think it's them listening suddenly to people like me, because they've never done that. But, that would be a new development. But I'm just happy that if it's true and that we're moving towards some kind of rollback of the ball, or combined with maybe a restriction on the size of driver heads, that's got to be good for the game, certainly at the top level. We're not talking about amateur golf. I mean, the game that you and I play, I mean, we need all the help we can get. With guys armed with good technique and the new technology, the game is losing a lot of its flavor, if you like.
Yeah, no, I agree. I know it's a difficult question, but if you're sort of, you know, when you look at these whispers, are they whispers from the right kind of people that you're hearing them from, or is this more just, you know, you think it's more lip service?
Well, sometimes it is. I mean, it's happened before that this is, we've had, you know, kind of little tip-offs. That, if you look at the language being used by Mike Davis and Martin Slumbers at the RNA, that there's little code words in there now and again that make you think that they are at last moving towards this. Because, I mean, they all know that they kind of let the genie out of the bottle, as it were, maybe 15, 20 years ago. And the trouble is that the equipment manufacturers are far too good at what they do.
Yeah.
They've created this situation by being, you know, terrific at what they do, and it's the benefits to the amateur golfer are enormous. I mean, it's been terrific for them, but at the top level, it's not been good. I mean, I've said this before, but golf at the top level has become much more of a science than an art, and it should be the other way around. I mean, we've lost, and again, I'm sure I've said this on your program before, but we don't have people like Seve Ballesteros or Lee Trevino or those guys, the true artists. We've lost them, and that cannot be good for the game going forward.
No. I mean, the only person, well, who moves the ball like those guys is Bubba Watson, and he hardly has the personality to be a Seve or anybody else of that matter. Want to move on to just a crazy story, and not that I want a recap of the whole situation, but just to speak on the remarkable personality of Henrik Stenson. Here's a guy who's been through a lot in his career. I mean, a financial scandal, a swindle, if you will, driver yips at one point. It makes his way back, wins an Open Championship, and then has his house burglarized. I mean, the fact that he was so, not that he was able to play golf, but his personality afterwards, he's so, you know, such joyous spirit, I guess, if no other way of putting it, is amazing to me, that how positive he is.
Well, that's true. I mean, it's a strange experience to have your house broken into. I've had that happen to me in the past, and you feel kind of violated. I mean, it's not so much that you lose, you know, material things that most of it can be replaced. It's only when you lose something that is some kind of sentimental value that it really matters. I mean, I think, I'm not sure what Henrik lost this week, but I think a lot of it was simply, you know, clothing and things like that.
Yeah.
So that can easily obviously be replaced. He's, but as usual, as you say, I mean, he's a top man, Henrik. He really is. He always seems to be able to crack some kind of joke about even that. And he made the point that, well, he was perfectly happy that his family hadn't been there when the burglars arrived. He was actually a little bit disappointed that he wasn't there. He would like to have had a wee word with him, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. You go.
Yeah, he was. He even made the. He said he was going to go out looking for them. I think at some.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to meet Henrik on a dark night. He'd be a formidable opponent.
Yes. Yeah, he's a big guy, and he has that look in his eye that he's definitely not somebody I would want to pick a fight with.
That's right. Definitely not.
But I hope that, and I think it is, that people, you know, we get this, you know, the whole idea of people railing on against golfers without personalities and the sort of get robotic in their answers. I hope they appreciate the Henrik Stensons of the PGA Tour and the guys with personality, you know, like that when, you know, in the face of adversity, like you said, you know, feeling violated like that and to still have a sense of humor about things really speaks to the man.
Yeah, he's a terrific guy, Henrik. I mean, and very approachable and great with kids. I've seen him, you know, you stand there and he actually chats to kids while he's signing the autographs and things. He's you can't say enough. I mean, that should be part of the job for all of these guys, but as we all know, they don't all behave in that way, sadly.
Yeah. I only wonder if the kids get his sense of humor. He says a bit of a dry sense of humor.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. I mean, there's a couple of times where you kind of have to have a double take, and then you see the little smile on his face, and you know he's joking.
I wanted to move along to Jon Rahm. Another rules thing. Is this something to, you know, what do we make of this? It's just sort of two very closely together, infractions or, you know, situations, if you will. Is he, you know, what's your take on it, actually?
Well, they're two very different things. I mean, the first one in Ireland with the marking the ball business, I'm prepared to accept that, you know, he made a mistake. I think we've all done that, especially when we've had to move the ball to the side, a putter length and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you move away and the other guy putts and you kind of lose track of what you did and you make a mistake. That's perfectly acceptable. I think every golfer would recognize that situation. I was a bit surprised that he wasn't penalized, though. I'm not quite sure that this, you know, he made every effort to put it back in the right place, so that's good enough. It was quite clear that he didn't put it back in the right place. So, I mean, I think there should have been a penalty involved in that, but not the four shots that Lexi Thompson had. It's got to be somewhere in the middle. To go from four shots to zero seems to me, you know, neither one of them was right.
Right.
This week, more than Jon Rahm, I think what came out of that was, I mean, Lee Westwood was the one that kind of, he was playing partner and called Jon Rahm on it and warned him that, you know, he might have broken the rule. And then Lee Westwood is almost forced to kind of apologize for sticking up for the rules and the rest of the field. And Lee Westwood is absolutely 100% correct to raise, you know, that there might be an issue. And so that I kind of always feel a bit uneasy about that. But Jon Rahm, I mean, he got away with it in inverted commas, but. You have to, on this situation, you really have to take him at his word. There's nothing on film. He said that whatever it was he moved from, you know, near the ball made no difference to his shot, and he would have had to be trying to hit maybe a 50-yard slice for it to have been part, you know, impeding his backswing. So in this instance, in the absence of any other evidence to the contrary, you really have to take his word for it. Otherwise, you're going to start to call people liars, which is a very tricky road to go down. So in that case, the player, you have to go with what, certainly if I'm the referee and the player tells me that, what other option have you got? You have to go with it.
You know, I'm with you. I think it puts, and it also puts Lee in a difficult position because you know he's going to be questioned afterwards. And then he's trying to be sort of take the high road, and as he should, but it also makes it look like he's, and I may be totally wrong on this, but when he just says, you know, I'm just trying to protect the field, and when it almost makes it sound like he had more to say and didn't want to say it about John, you know what I mean? Like the whole situation just seems to, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's an unfortunate consequence of, you know, I've spent a long time covering golf on the European Tour, and Rahm's countrymen, some of them don't have the best reputation, shall we say, when it comes to adherence to the rules. So there's maybe a bit of that involved, and certainly not in this case, because Lee is definitely above that kind of thing. I'm with Lee on this. I think he is there to represent the field, and that's an important part of the job that some players miss.
Yeah, but you know, but the media, when they sort of, some of the media, the way they portray it, it was almost...
Oh, you know what the media's like. they sniff us, especially there's an awful lot of tabloid journalists here this week. That's right up their alley. You know, a rules controversy. Heaven forbid that they would have to write about the golf.
All right. On that note, let's get to a second break here. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
At Winfield United, we understand the challenges you face and the goals you have. We promise to do our best and to help you do yours. With the introduction of tools like the Geotech Insight platform and products like Droplex Extra, we are advancing the industry to new levels, allowing you to manage your time and budget more efficiently. Visit WinfieldUnitedPro.com to find a representative near you today. Winfield United, a proud sponsor of the Long Island Golf Course Superintendents Association.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Pleased to be joined by golf writer John Huggin. John, let's, as you said, let's turn and talk about the golf. And first, the conditions, though. It seems like when I turned on the television this morning, looked pretty bright out there for the Open Championship.
Yeah, there's going to be some low scores today. There already have been. The first guy out playing by himself, Sean Norris. Guy I'm not really familiar with. He's a South African. He shot 65 at the tee this morning, and there's a whole bunch of red figures already on the scoreboard. So I think we can expect somebody to maybe even get another 63 in a major challenge.
Quite the leaderboard. You know, I want to actually let's talk about the golf course itself, though, just before we get to the leaderboard. I know you said that it has to be tricked up, but how do you think it's been presented to this point?
Pretty good. I mean, the Birkdale doesn't need a hell of a lot of tricking up, if you want to put it that way. It's certainly the best English course on the open rota, but as I've probably said on here before, I mean, I'm from Scotland, so Opens in England only count as half a major, unfortunately. So. But certainly it's the best one in England by a distance, I think. And the players' comments would certainly reflect that. There are some terrific holes out there. The sixth hole, the par four, is easily the most difficult. That was very predictable, but it's a terrific test. And there's some really good holes on the back nine. And plus, what I like about Birkdale is it takes to the 15th hole to get to a par five, and then you've got you've got the potential for eagles and birdies over the last four holes. So that can only add to excitement when you're coming down the stretch.
Yeah, absolutely. The leaderboard, I mean, quite a mix with Spieth sort of doing his thing yesterday, and I kind of thought he was kind of on the. I know how good he is, and I know he gets the ball in the hole as good as anybody currently playing on the tour. I just think if he really wants to finish off the deal, he's going to have to start hitting some more fairways.
He acknowledged that himself last night in his press conference. I was listening. He said, "Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to drive it better." But that's always the case with Jordan Spieth. It's the weakest. You say weak. Always sounds bad, but it's relatively speaking the weakest part of his game. It doesn't mean it's weak, it's just not as good as the rest of it.
Sure.
But he is going to have to improve. Certainly, he got away with a bit yesterday, but then so did Rory. Rory had a great score in some tough conditions yesterday, but he missed, I think, only hit one green out of the first seven on the back nine and got up and down at six of them. So, that's going to be part of the equation. Maybe not so much today because they're going to be shooting at the flags more than just trying to make pars. So, but it's going to be a kind of different test in a way. But it really should suit Rory. I mean, the course is soft after the rain. Historically, he's always done well on long, soft courses in major championships. And nearly every one that he's won has been on a long, soft course at the time. So he'll be, I would imagine, if I'm Jordan Spieth, I've got one eye on Rory just to see what he's up to, you know, up ahead.
Yeah, I would say that was going to be, you took the words right out of my mouth. It seemed like of all the people, I would say Rory McIlroy's got to be licking his chops at the conditions today. You know, he sort of got a bounce in his step again, from what we saw yesterday.
Yeah, it was a remarkable turnaround. I mean, as everybody knows, he was 5 over par. So, got a bit of a talking to from his caddy, which involved a few four-letter words that we can't use on the air. but it's probably just what he needed, was a kick up the backside like that. And from then on, I mean, my goodness, yesterday, he for a long period, I mean, it was almost immaculate golf. It was really sensational. Couple of slips near the end, but you know, the conditions probably caused that. You're never going to go all the way around yesterday without making a couple of mistakes.
No. And I was, the people at the end there, like, you know, Spieth and Koepka and some of the others, they really got away with some decent weather that was really forecasted to be maybe not as bad as they initially gonna forecasted, but there was some really gaps, some long gaps in the weather where there was nothing and even the wind was down.
Yeah. Well, the really heavy rain kind of killed the wind for about an hour. So they got an hour after the rain stopped of absolutely perfect conditions. It wasn't all horrendous yesterday. As you say, it kind of went up and down. It was getting breezy again towards the end, but they definitely got a break for 3 or 4 holes.
Yeah, definitely. You know, you mentioned JP, Rory's caddy. He sort of gets a lot of flack, I feel like, over the years. It seems like he's a guy who damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. He's got a lot of doesn't seem to always get the credit, I guess. Maybe that's a better way to put it.
You're right. I mean, I've been mildly critical of him. I do think they have problems with distance control at times. I think the number of times I've seen the two of them kind of looking at each other with, you know, aghast as the ball either comes up 20 yards short or 20 yards over the green. There's been quite a lot of that. But JP was actually, he was a very good player himself. He was good enough to play for Ireland as an amateur, and he got to the final of the Irish Amateur, and I think he certainly beat Darren Clark in an Irish Amateur back in the day, so he was a good player himself, and apparently a great putter. But Rory quite noticeably doesn't ask him for the line on any of the putts, which I've always found slightly odd, if he's such a good putter. But whatever, I mean, but as you say, you're a kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't. If you've got if you're on the bag for the most talented player in the game, there's only one way you can go, really.
Yeah, right. And he catches a lot of stuff for it. It just seems like, and some of it unnecessarily, I think. But you know, sort of. Let's talk about Ian Poulter. I mean, talk about getting your swagger back, I guess, so to speak. Mm. Really fantastic to see him playing well. I think he's one of the games. You know, I know he's a bit edgy. And a little rough around the edges, I guess, maybe a good way to put it. But he's one of the game's great personalities.
Absolutely. You know, you say what you like about Ian, and there's plenty of ways you can go either way on his personality and the way he struts around and all the rest of it. But he's terrific fun to watch and great for us in the media.
Yep.
He's always got something to say. He doesn't storm off if things don't go his way. I mean, last week at the Scottish Open, he was leading with a round to go, and he kind of fell away. I think 74 in the last round and finished tied for ninth, I think, which wasn't what he had in mind. And he hasn't won for a while. His form hasn't been great, and he's had the injury and all the rest of it. But he's had quite a year. Probably everybody knows him, and he was almost off the PGA Tour when they discovered that they'd miscalculated how much money he had to win to get his card back. And then he was second at the Players, and then he qualified for the Open here at his home club at Woburn. So, and now he's in contention to win. So there's a lot of positive things that have been happening in Ian's life the last few months, and he's the kind of guy that, and he knows how to ride a wave. It'll be interesting to see how he does. I'm not sure he putts quite well enough anymore to actually win, but I don't think he'll go away completely.
No, I agree with you, and I think there's a certain learning curve, if you will, to learning how to win again. You know, it's been a while since he's been there, and I think all evidence last week at the Scottish that it does take a little time to learn how to win again.
Yeah, definitely. It's a cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason. But you know, the more often you put yourself in that position, the easier it gets, and the more you get used to it, and the more you can make the putts when it comes down to it. It's like the tennis players at Wimbledon. You don't have to win all the points, but you have to win the right points, and it's the same with putts.
What's your take on Matt Kuchar in terms of him being ready to win and sort of he admitted, as you wrote, that he should have won more to this point. How do you fancy his chances coming the weekend?
Well, you know, if Matt plays the form, he'll finish T3 or T4, which is what he always does in majors. But there's an awful lot of players, not nearly as good as Matt Kuchar, who have major championships to their name. I hate to use the word deserve, but his record of consistency over the years, it would come as no surprise if he won one. I'm not sure it's going to be this one. I'm not sure the conditions on the course are really up, especially today. I mean, the really low score is more likely to come from Rory or Spieth than from Matt. That could be completely wrong. I'd like to see him win. He's a nice lad. He's got that kind of goofy look about him, but that's not really the reality. Anytime I've talked to him, there's a lot of intelligence behind that goofy grin.
Oh yeah, he's got that. But he definitely does have that Richie Cunningham from Happy Days working for him. That's for sure.
He does. But he and I actually shared a house. Can you believe? Back in the day at the Scottish Open when it was played at Loch Lomond, he was US amateur champion. He came over and played at Loch Lomond, and he was put up by a good friend of mine. Who was a member at Loch Lomond, and he had to leave, so it ended up it was Matt and me in the house for the week. So he and I have got a closer relationship than we probably should have.
Right. Last question, Brooks Koepka. Sort of odd not to play at all going into a major championship, but I'm not sure that'll serve him on the weekend as much as it is to it did on maybe getting to the weekend. But your thoughts on him?
Well, he showed a month ago that he's got the game to win. There's a wee bit more subtlety to this course than there was to Aaron Hill, and that kind of works against him, the way he plays. But then again, he was over here, played the European Tour. He knows, said all the right things about the condition, how liking the conditions, he loves to play and all this stuff. So, again, I don't think he's going to go away. If Jordan Spieth's going to win this, which I'm quite pleased with myself because I've been tipping Jordan Spieth all week, but if Jordan Spieth wins, he's going to have to beat Brooks Koepka and Matt Kuchar. I don't think they're going to go away.
No, and one person I don't want to go away, and I hope that he does, stays relevant on the weekend, is Richie Ramsey. He's done well to get to this point.
He does, yeah. I mean, he's from Scotland like me, and we've been crying out for somebody to come along and replace Colin Montgomery as somebody who might win a major championship. I'd be surprised if Richie Ramsey did win this, but I was also surprised when Paul Laurie won at Carnoustie, so plenty of things have happened.
John, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Anytime.
All right, we're going to take a short break and then we'll wrap things up. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Play like a pro with a custom set of PXG clubs in your bag. Designed to deliver unrivaled performance and fitted to optimize your game, PXG clubs will help you unlock your true potential. We guarantee you've never played like this before. Get fitted for PXG clubs at Pete's Golf Shop today.
All right, folks, that's it for this week of On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for joining me. And again, thanks for John Huggan, golf writer John Huggan, for joining me this morning. Always a pleasure to have his insights. One of the best at what he does. We'll catch you next week. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Have fun, everybody. Searching for his groove. Seemed like the whole
change was made up to